So, to start off, I kind of got to tell you as a little precursor to a story that neither Wendy and I are especially nostalgic people about traditionally kind of the events that you'd sort of mark or having parties or special things that much. As a really good illustration of that, the first time that we kind of hung out besides like a big group at church, we weren't trying to go on a date or anything at the time, but we were going to go see a play at the local community theater in Tallahassee where we were going to school. It was the play about C.S. Lewis called Shadowlands, if some of you are familiar. And it turned out that the time that we were seeing this play was on Wendy's birthday. And as it so happened, my dad was in town for work, and so he came to the play with us as well. So the first time that we hung out, it was not a date, but it was on her birthday, and she met my parents. So maybe that was a good indication that, like, things were going to end up going somewhere. But so going into that, when I found out, I was like, oh, man, is this, like, a little bit strange? Does it feel like we're putting too much emphasis on this? Or is it going to feel like there's all this pressure? And so I asked her, I was like, is there anything that we should talk about? Or she's like, I didn't even remember it was my birthday. Like, I don't think about that at all. And we continue to kind of have that type of approach to things for whatever reason. As it so happens, this past last couple weeks was our 15-year wedding anniversary. And we had thought we might actually try to do something for that, but obviously coronavirus and if you can go somewhere or do something special is kind of tamped down. So we didn't do that, but in that way it maybe felt even more normal for our last 15 years in general. But 2 years ago, we were in California, where we had lived for a long time in our marriage, visiting my brother who lives in San Diego now. And we happened to be visiting over the time that our anniversary was. So we thought, oh, maybe we'll actually try, even though it's very against type, to do something a little special and a little nostalgic, a little bit special in memory and putting more of an emphasis on it. And so we did this tour of memories in California. But of course, in sort of normal tradition, we couldn't fight it even if we tried. All those things ended up being kind of anticlimactic. So we tried to take the kids to visit the very first apartment that Wendy and I lived in after we got married, and Cohen fell asleep on the drive and then did not want to get up and look at anything while we were there. So he was just clinging to us and like, leave me alone. We went and visited my seminary and some other buildings from where we lived, and same thing, the kids thought a lot of that was really, really boring. Then we went to some places that Aislinn had actually had as her favorite places when we lived in California, restaurants, places where her friends lived in our apartment complex when we moved to a different place in Orange County. And of course, all the favorite restaurants were closed. They turned over into something else. And so we couldn't go get our favorite dishes as a way of remembering Aislinn had this gourmet hot dog place that she loved that had turned into a hot chicken place instead and all this. Neighbors weren't in the apartments that we remembered, so we didn't get to visit them the same way as we might have. And so it turned into, after we put in all this effort to actually go against type and try to do something special and remember all these specific places and things and concrete stuff that we could see and touch, and it just at first turned into this thing that was basically like a reminder of how things in our life are not in our control and that life can often get in the way of what we're really wanting to hold on to most and having things be the way that we would like them to always stay or be, and that we can't count on that. There's this tension between all of these important memories and formative aspects of our family and then the access to those things and the places that were connected to the memories and that we associated with the formative times. They didn't line up the way that we had hoped and didn't give us the memory and experience that we had thought we had all set ourselves up for going into that day. And I know that that's something that probably a lot of us can relate to. We've gone through a lot together in the last few months, living in that same sort of tension. We haven't been able to be connected to the places and to the activities and to some of the normal things that we count on the most to feel like our memories and our meanings are doing the things that we would hope to, are giving us the experiences that we would hope for. And we've rallied together really well in that tension. We've had some important experiences, even though we're also dealing with feelings of stress, with feelings of frustration about stuff that gets in the way. We've had so many people participate so well in worship. We've done what we could in the sanctuary and had people be able to view in and what we could do, and we've heard beautiful church memories that for me have been, it's an amazing chance to get to hear that, because I don't know if I would have thought to make sure to find out more of that as frequently as I have had we not had this experience. We've had preaching here in the courtyard. We've had preaching in other parts of the building to remember all the parts of the church that bring meaning to us. We've explored all the ways that God remains active in every aspect of our life, whether they're traditionally churchy or not, in our Finding Faith Off the Beaten Path series. Hopefully most of this, in a difficult season, has felt encouraging, but I know that for some of us, oftentimes it can feel difficult as a sort of reminder of the tension that we are living through, and I empathize with that a lot. So as we've been turning the page, I was praying and thinking about what types of things could I preach on and could we look at together in worship as we're able to be together in the courtyard. Maybe sometimes if the weather's bad and the level is low in the building. Doing more ministries together, like the community garden, like our Sunday school classes coming back together. And I did feel led to find a way to kind of look at what are the things with our building, with our traditional ministries, with our traditional churchy activities that really hit home for us the most, and how can we lock into those again as we're celebrating a chance to do things a little bit more closely together than we have. To root ourselves in our faith again through all of those means. And whether it turns out that we're able to be actually in the building or actually with all of those activities in the way that we're used to, or we're out in the courtyard or we're out in our daily lives, what is the deeper meaning in all of that that we can hold on to in all of those settings and celebrate and take hope in? We'll be continuing to do that in a few different ways in coming weeks as a sort of series of that deeper meaning of the things that we're most closely connected to. And I'm excited and want to give everyone a heads up that that will include Becky Duvall sharing some things about music and drama ministry next week. And I can't wait to hear what she has to share for that. This week, I originally had felt led to kind of look at some of the specific parts of the sanctuary, the things that we see all the time but might take for granted, and help us tap into the specific meanings of each of those parts of the sanctuary, and again, how we can hold on to that, whether we're in a building, whether we're in a courtyard, whether we're in our daily lives. What are the things that God uses space and physical items for to bring us meaning? And then how can we live that meaning in our daily lives? So I was doing my best to remind myself and make sure I wasn't just sort of spouting off a misplaced memory or something by researching the biblical and historical background of things like the pulpit, the lectern, stained glass, or the altar. But like God sometimes does, I realized that it didn't make sense to preach that sermon that I originally had thought, maybe this is what God is talking about and leading me to think, let's celebrate our space, let's celebrate our building, let's celebrate our physical things. And God kind of turned me on a different path. Because the thing is, as Christians, especially, as congregationalists, even more, and then as people who are living in a time where we could go up and down a road and see a different style of church, a different type of church, with different meanings that they attach or we attach to architecture, to musical style, to decorations, to how we dress or not. If we were to just look at any of this topically, we do just come back to that place of tension again and again. If we look, for instance, at the pulpit, I could have talked about how it's a raised up place that many people believe is an indication of how God's word transitions through the pastor, through whoever is giving the sermon, and into the congregation. And so that raised upness makes us feel that connection to God even more. But there are other people who see that and who feel like a pulpit is a way that a pastor is elevated too much. And congregationalists in particular feel very ambivalent about whether or not you would raise up a particular person in that way. The lectern can represent the ways that we bring all of ourselves together as a congregation and do liturgy, which means the work of the people. And so many people are able to participate and do something that's meaningful in our life of worship. However, there's, again, other people who find that overly formal, or that the separation, again, between where the people do their work of the worship and where the pastor does shouldn't be so separate. In stained glass, we have a powerful meaning of how the light of God comes into our lives and into our worship place in beautiful, wonderful patterns. And historically, stained glass is one of the ways that the story would be told to people of Jesus and of God's faithfulness through the life of God's people, especially if they couldn't understand the way that the sermon was given in Latin in particular, going back that far to when stained glass was especially popular. But many people also find different types of decorations too ornate. So, for instance, early Congregationalists did not want to have very decorated sanctuaries or stained glass because they felt like that was too much imagery and too much emphasis on something that was fancy and material rather than on focus on God. The same thing, again, can happen with the type of music that we have or the vestments or clothes that a choir wears or a preacher wears or that how we dress when we come to church. Again, some people really like things that show that we're doing something special in our focus on God, and other people want things that are more about how we can be accessible to God, that God accepts us however it is that we come in worship. And in the altar, we can remember that we are offering the sacrifice of our worship when that's in our sanctuary, and we put the sacrifice of Jesus in communion on the altar when we celebrate that each month. But again, there are many churches and many people who feel that having an altar is too much of a connection to the Old Testament covenant and the law, and so therefore, coming into the covenant with Jesus, that is not always the best fit. And so, in the passage that we saw from Colossians today, in the history of Congregationalism, which so emphasized a break from the English church and the Catholic church, and what they had felt had become too ornate, too decorative, too focused on earthly things rather than on emphasis on God. And Paul, he's looking at a time when believers couldn't even be in a building, and their relationship with the Jewish temple or the Jewish synagogues in different cities was very mixed because they had different beliefs than some of the people there. And there were temples to other gods that people who were not Jewish that were becoming Christians had connection to and wondered, should we continue to participate in that because it's just sort of the normal part of daily life? Or should we separate ourselves from that completely? So much of the Bible, so much of Christian history, as much as we value our current circumstances today, sits in that tension of either not being able to have a place to worship because you're out in the desert, you're exiled from your country, and you've been conquered and carried off to another empire like Babylon or Assyria. You're leaving the normal practices of first century Judaism and starting a new focus on Jesus with new people, not just Jews, but Gentiles. And so where do you find your home? And we have all of these then things back and forth about what do we do to fully root ourselves in a way that follows God, even as different beliefs that people have, different experiences from the Bible throughout Christian history, can put us where none of those things have easy answers. And it's hard. It can be exhausting to live in tension all the time, especially when a lot of the rest of our life also has turmoil that's part of it. And so I know how much we've continued to do that. We have done our best to both hold up the value of all the things that we do together and the resources that God has given us and the memories that we have in our spaces together, while also trying to be a people that say our faith is not defined by one particular hour of the week, our faith is not defined by one particular place in the world, that God is with us at all times, in all circumstances, whatever we're able to do, and we can live our faith wherever we are. And those are both good things to hold together, even if sometimes it feels hard to do so. But I really do believe that God isn't just calling us to sit in tension all the time and be tired and frustrated by that tension. God gives us comfort. God gives us ways of strengthening ourselves. And I think that we can find something to hold on to. Because while it's true, and I don't think that we can deny it, throughout the Bible, throughout Christian history, throughout our congregational tradition, that we need to remember that we can get distracted and caught up too much in something that we feel like is more about us and our favorite place, our favorite thing, and God calls us not to get stuck too much in that. God doesn't want us to have nothing to hold on to. So what do we hold on to together as a community instead? So this week I was talking just to catch up in general with Camilla Daniels. And that's where God started rewriting the sermon and what we can focus on and how we can find our foundation together, even in this tension for me. She was sharing her experiences of her family, who many of you know. She has family in Iowa. She has family in Florida. And they were both in the path of big recent storms, the derecho in Iowa, the hurricane in Florida. And as we were talking about how they're getting through that and dealing with property loss and power loss and trying to figure out what their next steps will be, she helped me remember that in those moments, people seem to have a really interesting experience, again, with physical things, with buildings, with possessions. Where going through that experience, people will often say, you know, I realized that a lot of the stuff that I lost was just stuff. I have my loved ones still with me. I believe that we'll find a way to rebuild. I don't want to get too fixated on that. And yet at the same time, this is even sort of a popular party question, but people will say, there was this one thing that I wanted to go and make sure that I held on to. This one family photograph. This one hand-me-down that had gone through generations of the family, that helped them stay anchored and have that foundation, even as they're going to be trying to build up their life back. That stuff can be just stuff and can distract us from the way that God wants us to live and focus most on our relationships, most on the love and service that we can do. And yet there are those things that give us our anchors, give us our foundation, give us that deeper meaning and help us hold on to the love that God wants us to have. Help us hold on to the service we're supposed to give. Help us have a foundation in difficult times. And that's where we come then to our Old Testament passage. In this time where Joshua is leading the Israelites, continuing in Exodus out of slavery in Egypt, they've just crossed the Jordan River. So they've gone out of the desert in the wilderness for 40 years. And they're taking their first steps into the promised land that God had shown to Abraham generations ago and then continued for Moses and Joshua as a destination. They had gone through so much turmoil up to this point, a generation's worth of struggle. They knew still that even as that was true, that God was with them through all of it. And then, through the churning stream of the Jordan, things were spread apart and they were able to pass. God intervened and took some of that turmoil away, at least for a moment, and gave them solid ground to walk on. And then they came into the promised land, and yet that didn't mean things were going to stop being difficult and suddenly stop being easy. The turmoil was not done. And yet they knew, because of what they'd experienced, that God would continue to be with them even through that continued season. And then, so God called them, even right in the midst, on the banks of that swirling stream that had now come back after God had parted it, and said, let's do something, not even as significant as a building, as a temple. A small altar made of 12 stones, no concrete specifically to hold them together. They wouldn't necessarily have tons of people just stay there and always be at the altar for the rest of history. But something that connected each of the 12 tribes, all of the people who had gone through all of the struggle, to each other and to God for how God had been faithful to them. A symbol, but also somehow more than a symbol. That concrete thing that showed them all that God can do and all that God would continue to be doing. Because at its best and purest, that's what any of our buildings, any of our concrete possessions of a ministry are. Sometimes we can get distracted by them, but ultimately it's an attempt for us to take some small part of what we have and see it come together and feel the strength that we have from God and from each other. Yes, we can be tempted to look only at the stones as the thing that we can see and touch, and it makes us miss the God that actually they're supposed to point to, and the life that God wants us to lead. Yes, we can get too particular about whether our altar of stones looks better or worse than someone else's upriver, or we can try to get too controlling about how the stones get put together when we see someone else putting theirs slightly out of place than how we wish it would have been done. But when we stay focused on just living the simplicity of the stones of our buildings, of our traditions, of our traditional ministries, I think that we will stay in connection with God and each other. Because when it gets down to it, I know that what's most important about our building, our pulpit, our lectern, our altar, our style of dress that any of us choose to do, the music that we're so strongly led by Vicky and Lori, the true meaning of all of that is not the things that they symbolize, not even the things themselves, but it's the people that fill all of them. It's the experiences that we share together. And it's the presence of God that we experience, whether we can describe it really eloquently or not. So what I want us to do in this season, as we are finding ways to come back together and see some of these things, especially if you're feeling in the midst of a storm, whether it's because of coronavirus and how that persists, whether it's other individual experiences in your life, whether you're here in the courtyard or you're joining us on Facebook, I'd like to give yourself some time to think in your mind and hold on to some stone from this place. Hold on to it, take comfort in it, find a foundation for it, for all the things that we're going to continue to face in our upcoming season. It might be a specific place or thing in our building or on the grounds. It could also be a person that you're used to seeing here, but you haven't been able to see as often recently. It could be a memory of an experience that comes to mind. It could be something in your faith that doesn't exist for you just as a general idea or topic, but is specifically rooted in something that you've done as a ministry in this church. Whatever it means for you, God gives us all of these stones, all of these concrete things as gifts. I hope that you can find time to reflect and receive those things in that way. And in part, it's because I know that while we're going into a new season, we will continue to go through things that are difficult still. Things are not completely settled yet. We're going to, just like the Israelites, continue to need God's faithfulness, continue to need those foundations, continue to need those things that say, look at what we have that shows God's faithfulness, shows the life that God has called us to, and we can share with ourselves and each other when we need encouragement, we need strengthening, what it is that God offers to us, even in those most difficult times. Then I'm going to ask you to do two other small things for me once you have that stone in mind. And this, again, comes actually from advice that Camilla gave me that she's giving herself this week as she sees the struggles that some of her family is going through. She said, you know, Rob, it can be so frustrating and so overwhelming when I see the pain and difficulty that folks around me are going through because I want to help, and yet I also know that I can't solve everything it is that they're sharing for me. So it feels like I'm small, like I'm butting up against a wall, and even when I want to do something, will it even make a difference? And yet she continually reminds herself, she knows she can find one small thing at least that she can do to support someone in struggle, even if it's just offering a shoulder to cry on, an ear to hear the difficulty, or some small thing that she could pass on that because people have gone through something incredibly traumatic, that they might not even have that small thing anymore. And then she can see, without worrying about whether she can solve the entire problem, she can say, I can bring my little stone and see how God uses it as a building block. So again, I encourage you, find your stone in the physical place here, in the people whose faces we look around and see, in the memories that we have, and that people like Krista and Jeannie will share later. Let God use it to give you a foundation. And then I hope that you'll let God show you how you can stack that stone together with the stones of other people gathered here. And how you can use that stone to offer foundation to other people in your life who you know are really feeling going through the storm right now, whether it's personal, whether it's big socially, whatever it is, that stone can be your foundation and someone else's too, because of how we offer the strength that God's faithfulness represents in that stone. And I believe that reflects really the true substance and spirit of this church. And it reminds us of the power of how this building, these grounds, and all of our traditions do bind us together as a powerful church family and with God for the blessing of all that God would call us to. At this point, I'll invite Jeannie to...